This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
The question that we need to answer is no data better than the data that we're providing? And are we able to provide this data and give enough context to how it should be interpreted?
You may have been getting ready to leave the house recently and noticed on your phone that the air quality was going to be less than ideal that day. There are a lot of people and technologies behind that seemingly simple process. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with the CEO of IQ Air North America, Glory Dolphin Hammes, to learn more about her company's history, its air visual product, and the evolving field of air quality monitoring. We discuss how crowdsourcing works to give us a clearer picture of air quality, the challenges of getting the word out to the public about unsafe air, particularly in underserved communities, and look at the impact of recent EPA rollbacks. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Glory Dolphin Hammes. She is the CEO of IQ Air North America. Glory, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me.
So IQ Air, a lot of people have come across your product through Air Visual, and they probably didn't know much about your company. It's not just a fly-by-night startup. It's a pretty well-established, family-owned international company. Why don't you tell us more about the history of IQ Air?
Sure. IQ Air was started by Manfred and by Klaus Hammes in 1963, actually in Germany. And Manfred was a lifelong asthma sufferer. And what they were looking to accomplish was to give folks refuge within Europe from coal-based ovens that actually exacerbated asthma symptoms. So that's really how we got started in 1963. And from there, there's just been lots and lots of air quality innovation.
So why don't you explain what the Air Visual product is?
Yes, Air Visual is just, for us, it's really a project that we essentially, it fills us. It's really a part of our ethos and who we are. We believe that people have a right to know when it comes to air quality. And that's what's so important. As human beings, what we need to know in order to improve our health is what's the state of the air quality. And we need to know that so that we can improve it, and also so that we can reduce our exposure overall.
And do people need to buy the IQ Air filters or monitors to be part of this crowdsourcing system, or are you getting data from a combination of outlets?
Yes, we get a wide variety of contributors to the Air Visual platform. It's something that community, people that are a part of community groups, people from government, also what's called citizen scientists. So an individual that wants to put up a monitor because there isn't at all a monitor locally within miles, that we accept really all types of contributors. And we really encourage people when they get a monitor that they make those monitors public so that people can have free access to air quality data.
And where are some of the hot spots that IQ Air and your Air Visual product have really made an impact?
Well, of course, there's still, although the United States has a very much so a dense monitor network, it's not dense enough in terms of environmental justice areas. So there are still a lot of areas within the United States that are underrepresented. And these are usually socioeconomically disadvantaged areas that do not have enough air quality monitoring in order to help people reduce their exposure.
And when we say air quality monitoring, we're talking more like the NOAA, the NOAA, the official government monitoring, and this is where the air visual product can fill that void?
Well, when we talk about monitoring, we talk about the whole gamut. So not only do we include government monitors on our platform, we also include private monitors from community groups, from citizen scientists, low-cost monitors. So we include the whole gamut in order to make air quality data more accessible.
When you say the economically challenged areas that traditionally have not gotten the type of air monitoring that's required for areas like Richmond, California, which is like right in the wake of a refinery, and it gets much, much worse air than 10 miles away in Berkeley, let's say. What gap has air visual filled that didn't exist before you came around?
Well, the gap that we're able to fill, there's still something that air visual is not able to fill right now at this moment. And what is very important to monitor in these certain areas along these corridors here is what's called black and brown carbon. So Richmond in particular, it's interesting that you brought that up, but Richmond in particular has a very high level of black and brown carbon. And these, when it comes to air pollutants, that is the most, I would say, the highest level of one of the highest levels of toxicants when it comes to cancer-causing pollution.
And then let's turn to the wildfire issues, which is where millions of people around the planet refer to your product on a daily basis when something smells a little different in the air. How has that changed? And what are the challenges in trying to find a good mix of what's particulate matter and what's just naturally occurring in the air?
What's naturally occurring in the air are really things like oxygen, certain level of carbon dioxide, nitrogen. These are things that are naturally occurring in the air. And so when it comes to particulate matter, that we would really classify as something that is unnatural within the air. So the gas phase, the pure gas phase elements are truly naturally occurring within the air. But particulate matter, that's where it stops. That's definitely something that is not naturally occurring.
And measuring that particulate matter is an evolving process. There's new data and new particulate matter that's being discovered that's potentially detrimental to human beings. This is a work in progress in many ways, right? How, maybe you can give us an idea of how your measuring has evolved over the last decade.
Sure. And it's just not our measuring, but it's the standards overall. There used to be just over the last couple of decades an emphasis on PM10, and there's still a lot of organizations, lots of government that still monitor PM10. What we found is that PM2.5 has been a more significant way of measuring air quality, where we're able to make those connections in terms of health risks. We are able to see those direct connections a whole lot better than PM10. So PM2.5 is really where it's at right now in terms of air quality measurements. However, there's also PM1, and PM1 is even smaller in terms of PM2.5 when you compare that. It's really smaller, and we're seeing that there's actually more health risks that can be associated with smaller size particles. So that's why it's important that we keep raising the bar. We keep raising the bar in terms of what we're measuring in terms of making those connections, in terms of doing the research and getting better and better over time, in terms of the science and the knowledge that we're bringing to air quality.
Invitations in, it beats out, get out and do it again. Less and bless them, put it to shame. Only gonna do you blind, whole lot of folks can't see that high. We've been walking on air, y'all. Been walking on air. We've been walking on air, y'all. Been walking on air. Been walking on air, y'all. Been walking on air. We've been walking on air, y'all. Been walking on air.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Glory Dolphin Hammes. She is the CEO of IQ Air North America. So, Glory, speaking of raising the bar for air monitoring, one of the variables that you and your colleagues face is figuring out the right altitude for measuring and weighting what's clean air and what's not. We can see very big differences from 1,000 feet up versus ground level. Why don't you expand if you can?
I love your question because that means like you're right in the thick of it in terms of air quality. These are very detailed questions that we do talk about, we do discuss, and we do the research on there. So yes, the height of a monitor is important. What we really truly want to measure is ground level data. So what's important is the human being. The human being is really the most important factor, where if we can do a good guesstimate of where this, the height or the altitude of where human beings would be, that's where we want to measure.
Looking at some of the NOAA things, they're using these weather balloons to measure particulate matter. And then obviously with these big wildfires, that air can go way up in the air. And that may seem like not a problem until it falls down, and different particulate matter will fall at different rates. And that's got to be a very difficult thing to try to predict when you're looking at a major metropolitan area perhaps being affected by a big bad air event.
Right. There's what's called a dispersion model. And what that means is that there is actually a concentration value. There's a value that is determined, the level of concentration and the distance away from the main source. So this is what's called data modeling. So NOAA, although their weather balloons may be in a certain place, they are able to see certain levels of concentration. It's not the most accurate if you're looking at a sensor versus data modeling, but overall, they're really truly trying to get better and better overall in terms of how to guesstimate what the concentration would be based on the distance away from the source and based on the topography and the weather patterns as well.
So one of the reasons I know a little bit more about this than the average Joe is, I live in the Bay Area. I live in San Francisco, and we've had some pretty remarkable air quality events over the last decade or so with the growth of these big wildfires in Sierra Nevada. And I'm a little more sensitive, I think, than most people from in terms of the particular matter. I need to put on a mask a little sooner than my wife, for example, when I'm going outside. So I've been keeping an eye on air visual and purple air for a long time. We interviewed the CEO of Purple Air, Adrien Dubois, 6-7 years ago. Maybe explain what purple air does and how air visual differs in your approach.
Oh, I'd probably leave that up to Adrien to determine that. But I'll give you a little bit of background, though. Adrien and I are a part of an air quality work group that was established by the EPA. So we do work together really within the work group, and it's really all about having more and more air quality data available.
From a user standpoint, if you're opening up your air visual app versus looking at a map at Purple Air, is there a difference in, like, do you guys measure PMT1 and they measure PMT2.5, et cetera, just in terms of your methodology?
Sure. I probably wouldn't be the best person to know what exactly the differences might be product-wise, but I do say our platform is different. We try to make our data widely available. We do that, and we also have a process to quality assure the data as well. So we have a high emphasis really on giving accurate, timely data, and to do that on a wide range. So Purple Air, they might have lots of Purple Air monitors, but we've got to have more monitors. And we also include Purple Air monitors on our platform, by the way. Our platform is really, truly, that's important for me to mention, but our platform is sensor agnostic. So that's a little bit of that difference, because we collect data and we aggregate data from all types of sensors, and we clean the data and we quality assure the data, because we believe that making accurate, timely data available to all people is the most important thing. Because if people were able to get this data, then that would allow them to make informed choices about their health, but also to guide them generally to demand cleaner air for themselves and for their communities.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned the curation element of your monitoring systems, because I've looked sometimes in a neighborhood in San Francisco that's very different from another neighborhood. And San Francisco is kind of famous for having these microclimates, so that wouldn't be that unusual. But then when I dug a little deeper, I would notice, oh, this is one Purple Air monitor that's maybe an outlier. It could be like the monitor is placed in an area where it could be in a restaurant where they're trying to make sure that the employees are breathing clean air, and maybe the restaurant's open and it's busy, versus, you know, if it was 3 in the morning, you're not going to be getting a yellow or red peak coming from that one monitor. And so that's where the automated system kind of has some shortcomings.
It can. One of the things that we ask ourselves within the EPA work group, this is what is brought up consistently, and the question that we need to answer is no data better than the data that we're providing? And are we able to provide this data and give enough context to how it should be interpreted?
The education of the public seems to be a very important element of this, like a clean air days in California, or just the idea that people need to scale back some of their outdoor activities when the air isn't clean. That doesn't seem to be permeating to the general public as much as it should be.
This is a very important message, because when there are air quality episodes, when the air quality is worse on some days, the impact to human health is increased. So it is important on these poor air quality days to be less active outdoors where the air pollution is higher, and to maybe take that activity indoors in a more cleaner environment.
They sure look pretty in a magazine. If the meaning is lost, people let you down. To our health we drink, all our troubles drown. Set it in motion. Yeah.
It's just a moment in time that's fleeting by. Can't possibly be fathomed by the naked eye.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Glory Dolphin Hammes. She is the CEO of IQ Air North America. So, Glory, you were talking about your work with this EPA work group. This is kind of a painful question to have to ask, but the EPA has changed quite a lot this year. As the EPA's mandate has shifted drastically, how does your work group function effectively?
So the EPA work group, this is actually a work group that would meet regularly. We have not had a meeting, and we don't have a meeting on the schedule now for this year. So that's a little bit odd for us. So it is a kind of an awkward stage here, where we're hoping that we will not take really the steps, too many steps backwards, as we forged so much towards really improving the air quality overall. So we're hoping that we can continue in that vein to make improvements.
So when we're talking about the Air Visual product, you don't have to Google Air Visual. There's a lot of ways that people with smartphones can access your data. Why don't you explain how they may have already used your product without knowing it?
Yes, probably if you asked what the air quality was on Google, even on ChatGPT or all of the various AI tools that people are using today, you've most likely accessed IQ Air data.
And it's built into your iPhone as well, right?
That's right. We have an app as well as a website, IQAir.com, that gets an enormous amount of views and visitors, but also this data is accessible through a lot of the AI tools that people are using today.
So we spent most of our time in our discussion talking about Air Visual, but why don't you expand a little bit more on some of your air quality products that IQ Air is focusing on? What are your suite of products that you're most excited about, Glory?
Yeah, I am excited about Air Visual, because that's probably, I would say, our most important product. Why? Because knowledge is power, basically. And there's so much that we can do if we knew. And that's really what's very important. So IQ Air overall, we're committed to providing air quality solutions. We not only measure the air and provide air quality data, we also provide air quality solutions, which that's actually how we began in 1963. We began with very specific solutions for coal-based ovens that were typically used throughout Europe. And these solutions were really provided for folks that had asthma and other respiratory issues. So that has been really the vein and the ethos that IQ Air was founded on. And we've expanded into other types of products beyond just simple filters, into purifiers, into masks. And just on Monday, we unveiled our very first forested wood housing air purifier that's made of 100% forested wood.
And are these all on a consumer level, or do you also make enterprise scale filtration systems?
Yes, they're on a consumer level, so they're for consumers, but we also have what's called a clean air facility program, in which we monitor not only what's called outside air that establishes baseline. We have a program where we compare that outdoor air to the indoor air to get and achieve over 90% cleaner air indoors. That's our clean air facility program. And we do that for various commercial enterprise locations.
Glory Dolphin Hamas is the CEO of IQ Air North America. Glory, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
We have a few extra minutes on this week's show, so I thought I'd share an additional perspective on the efforts by the Trump administration to take control of the Federal Reserve Board. Consider this a little bonus material for those of you who listened to the recent Sea Change Radio interview with Nathan Tankus and had some more questions about this complex issue. This is an excerpt from former Secretary of Labor and UC Berkeley professor Robert Reich's blog post from September 4th, 2025, entitled Trump and the Art of Extortion, How to Understand His Desire to Control the Fed and Everything Else. Given everything else Trump is doing, why worry about the Fed? Control over the Fed will give Trump power over the central bank's decisions on interest rates. He says he wants to lower borrowing costs, making it cheaper for America to pay interest on the national debt, for businesses to get loans, and for Americans to buy homes. But if he controls the Fed and reduces borrowing costs, lenders will correctly assume that the Fed can no longer be relied on to control inflation. As a result, lenders will charge more money to lend money, a higher risk premium, whether lending to the United States or to businesses seeking commercial loans or individuals getting mortgages. In other words, if Trump controls the Fed, he'll end up with the opposite of what he seeks. Longer-term interest rates will rise. It's already starting to happen. And as longer-term rates rise, the stock market will fall. Put on your seatbelts, folks. So maybe lower interest rates isn't the real reason Trump is so intent on controlling the Fed. Money is not enough. He relishes the submission of others. He craves obsequiousness, groveling servility, and ass-kissing. He detests criticism. He wants to get even. He wants a Nobel Prize and his face carved on Mount Rushmore. His goal is to achieve or be perceived to have achieved omnipotence. Normal policy debates are over what's good for the public, hence public policy. But we're no longer in a world of normal policy debate. The central question inside the Oval Office and among Trump's enablers in the White House and Congress is what will enrich Trump and strengthen his dominance over everyone and everything else. The most important public policy debate we ought to be having is how to peacefully and lawfully rid America and the world of this menace.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Herbie Mann, Mofro, and Fog Swamp.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.